Welcome to the Side Hustle Project, a podcast where we explore the nitty-gritty details behind what it takes to start and grow a profitable side hustle. I'm your host, Ryan Robinson, and in this podcast, I'm bringing you interviews with entrepreneurs, best-selling authors, CEOs, investors, and people just like you who are building and profiting from interesting side hustles. In today's episode, we're talking to AJ Goyle, the founder of GMass, a tool that overlays onto Gmail and allows you to send mass mail merge email campaigns, helping you reach more people with your outreach campaigns. Today, the company's generating a whopping $90,000 a month in recurring revenue from its more than 6,300 paying customers, which is pretty impressive considering how the company got started. But first, let's rewind to 2001. It was during this year, while AJ was doing web development consulting, that he founded his first SaaS company that really got a meaningful amount of traction. And after building an MVP of an email delivery tool for a consulting client of his, AJ immediately saw the need that others would have to send bulk emails. So he launched an email service provider business named Django Mail. This was the same year that MailChimp got started, and soon the market was flooded with hundreds of competitors in this space. Still, AJ grew Django Mail into a profitable business that he eventually sold in 2013. And after that, he took some time off to allow himself to just start pursuing other fun projects that he was personally interested in. And it was at this time that AJ began working on for the idea of GMass, as he was actually focused on building another business called WordZen. And WordZen was a service that provides live editors to help you write and edit your emails. But as AJ was trying to get the word out about this project, he got frustrated with how difficult it was to send a high volume of emails from within Gmail. So that is what sparked the idea for GMass. In this episode, AJ and I talk about how he built and launched the MVP for GMass in just a couple of weeks and what it was like acquiring his first few hundred customers from Reddit and Product Hunt. We cover why AJ made the decision to keep GMass a completely free product for the first year of his life, what happened when he flipped the switch over to making it a paid product, and why he made that decision. We dive into AJ's most effective acquisition channels, from content marketing to paid social ad campaigns, how he transitioned from consulting to running a SaaS business, his biggest lessons learned over the years, and much more. As always, you can find everything we mentioned in today's episode in the show notes at ryrob.com/podcast. That's spelled ryrob.com/podcast. Let's get into today's interview with AJ Goyle. AJ, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ryan. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you here. This is a topic, mass email. This is something that I've been really wanting to dig more into myself. And for selfish reasons, I'm excited to be chatting with you today. So my first question for you, AJ, is a question that I ask all of my guests here on the show. So what book are you reading right now, or what's been your favorite recently?
Oh man, I'm embarrassed to say that I haven't read a book cover to cover in a really long time. I tend to read more short form articles, things like articles on Medium or blogs like Gizmodo and Lifehacker and TechCrunch and The Next Web. I have a list of books that have been recommended to me that I would love to read, but I never get to it.
And I want to share with our listeners here today that one of the reasons you may not have gotten to it recently is that you just moved, right, to Milwaukee?
I did, yeah. I had been living in downtown Chicago in River North for the last 13 years, but I just settled in Milwaukee because my wife is from here, and we had this long-term plan of being here for a while, and so it's finally happening, and it's quite the change of pace and lifestyle from the heart of downtown Chicago to rural suburban Wisconsin.
I can imagine. But AJ, I want to talk about you today. So let's take it way back to the early days. Where are you originally from?
I grew up in Dayton, Ohio. Dayton is a city close to Cincinnati, southwest Ohio. And I grew up there because my dad, who is also a software developer, was working for NCR, which was probably the largest company at the time in the 80s and the 90s.
All right. And what do you think was sort of your first side project business project that you worked on that kind of felt like it sparked your interest in being an entrepreneur? Because that path has clearly been a part of your life.
Probably the first entrepreneurial thing that I did was launch AJ's lawn mowing service in the summer between 8th and 9th grade. That was my first attempt at selling a service or a product, and it didn't go well. I distributed flyers to about 75 houses around the neighborhood, and I ended up with one customer, and that was my next door neighbor, and that's because they knew me already.
Well, I feel like therein may actually lie a very good lesson about sales.
Yeah, right. That sales is not easy. and, well, what that taught me is that sales was relationship-based. So I had this relationship with my next-door neighbor. So when they saw that I wanted to mow lawns, they became my first client. And actually, what's interesting is that in my evolution of being an entrepreneur and kind of being a salesperson, one of the things that I've always disliked about being an entrepreneur was having to go out and build relationships in order to generate sales. And I just never liked that whole schmoozing and whining and dining kind of sales process. And that's kind of set me on a path towards building products and businesses where that's not necessary. So one of the things I like about the software as a service world that I'm in is that if I can get people to my website and show them how my product can improve their lives in some way, then the sale isn't necessarily about building a bond or creating a relationship. It's just about me providing value through my software. And I like that model. I like the salesperson-less model.
Yes, especially when it's like totally self-serve from the user perspective.
Exactly, right.
So AJ, one of the first businesses that I'm familiar with that you started is called Django Mail, which is an email service provider, not too dissimilar from, you know, other tools out there like MailChimp, et cetera, except that you started working on Django Mail back in 2001. What was your original goal with Django Mail when you were starting on it?
Yeah, so Django Mail originated as a side project for a web development client that I had. So I was building websites for companies. That's how I was earning my living at the time. And one of my web development clients needed a little like mass email widget built into their website that like talked to their database and made it easy for their admins to send an email campaign to their users. So I originally built this little prototype thing for them. But then as I started showing it around to people, just the idea was planted that maybe this could exist as a standalone product and potentially a standalone business. And I got a few other companies that I already knew of to use it, and they liked it. So then I broke it out into a separate domain, a separate website, which evolved into DjangoMail.com. And it was actually around the same time that MailChimp was launching as well. There were like a few, maybe about 10 different email marketing service providers that all kind of started around the same time. MailChimp, Constant Contact, iContact, Bronto Mail, if you've heard of any of these larger email service providers. But yeah, Django Mail started out as a custom project for a web development client. And then I ended up running Django Mail because it started growing faster than the web development business. Ended up running it for about 10 years. I sold it in 2013 to a private equity group. And then that kind of led to the stuff that I'm doing now.
So before we keep going, I want to actually take a quick aside and highlight this for everyone listening today, because this is a really common trend that I see with a lot of the entrepreneurs that I talk to here on the podcast, is that many of them start as service providers and they eventually leapfrog into having a product-based business or a SaaS business by realizing that they could sort of productize the service that they offer to some of their clients. Would you say that that's kind of been a trend that you've noticed as well?
I would venture to say that most software as a service companies start out that way. They start out either by offering a service, as you said, and then productizing it, or they start out by solving some sort of a problem that they just have internally that a solution doesn't exist for, and then come to the realization that other people have that same problem, and so why not productize this internal solution they've built? In fact, MailChimp, which is probably the most ubiquitous email marketing service provider, that company, the company behind MailChimp, I think used to be called the Rocket Science Group, that was also a web development company that built this tool for their clients and then productized it, just in the exact same manner that Django Mail was started. So yes, it was a very popular way for SaaS companies to be launched because it just logically flowed.
Yeah, I love that. And then you're not venturing into uncharted territory by trying to solve a problem that you don't fully understand for people that you may not actually know that well.
Exactly. And you always have your web development business to fall back on if your product idea doesn't work.
What would be some pieces of advice, or maybe, you know, one best piece of advice, let's say, for people listening today who have some sort of freelance business or consulting business, and they're wanting to work on some sort of product or a SaaS product on the side of their consulting work? What's your best piece of advice to help them get traction and begin to shift gears in a way that's sustainable over to a product-based business?
Ooh, one piece of advice. That is a big question. So my one piece of advice is to solve a problem that you are experiencing yourself. And the reason I say that is because in my experience, the first version of any product that I've built has always sucked. And it's the evolution of that product as I learn what the real business problem is. It's the evolution of the product that has a better chance of sticking and succeeding in the market. But the only way I've ever been able to evolve a product is if it solved a problem that I myself had, because then I'm close enough to the problem that I can build something useful. And, you know, there's a lot of like books and papers you can read that will talk about studying the market and talking to your customers and really understanding what their needs are so that you get the right product market fit. And that's all great. That's all valuable advice to follow. But I think that the even better way to do that and the simpler, more efficient way to do that is by focusing on yourself. And if you can figure out a problem that you have that nobody else has built a solution for, then there's a very good chance that other people have the same problem and that you can be the one to solve it.
I love that. I think that's very time-tested advice too. So AJ, I want to switch gears now. Let's go fast forwarding up to when you sell Django Mail. What comes next for you at this point in time? You know, you just sell a business. Do you go back to web development? Do you have something else up your sleeve? What's the plan at this point in time?
At that point in time, I had no plan. One of the motivations behind selling Django Mail for me was I was burnt out. I had been working pretty hard for the prior 10 years. I had always run my company in a pretty lean way. Small staff, lots of responsibilities on each staff member. I was trying to keep profit and margins high. I was doing a lot of stuff myself. I was doing a lot of code writing myself. I was doing a lot of customer support. I was doing a lot of digital media management on my own, writing blog articles. So I was burnt out and really, you know, I think one could even say depressed for the last couple of years of running Django Mail. You know, email marketing had sort of become what felt like a commoditized space. And so for a while, I found it difficult to be challenged. I found it difficult to wake up in the morning and be excited to go to work because I couldn't figure out, one, how to innovate anymore, and I couldn't figure out how to be a good leader anymore to my staff who was looking to me for ways to evolve beyond email marketing, beyond what we were doing to grow our SaaS platform. And for whatever reason, I was out of creativity, out of ideas, I was burnt out. So fortunately, I found a guy to buy the company who had plenty of ideas and plenty of energy to take it over. So for me, after I sold, I had a year-long commitment to work for the new owner to help transition some knowledge over. And after that, I spent about a year waking up and going to Starbucks every day and just reading, sipping a latte and just reading about what other people were doing in software and tech and just letting ideas brew, but not actually putting the pen to the paper and implementing or coding anything.
I love that. You basically gave yourself permission to kind of kick back and relieve the stress and come to a natural starting position for what came next.
Exactly. I certainly wasn't going to force an idea upon myself. And I think as an entrepreneur who has just sold a company, when people get wind of that, people are excited to pitch you an idea. So it was fun in a way that I got a lot of attention, and lots of friends and colleagues and family members would pitch ideas to me. But I couldn't take any of them seriously, just because I knew that I wasn't at a place mentally where I wanted to plunge headfirst into a new idea. And so for me, my next idea was kind of this like natural convergence of like an idea that I had, plus some people asking me about it at the same time, plus some things that happened in the technology space that all kind of converged together to lead me to the stuff that I'm working on now.
Ah, now let's talk about what you're working on now. What was the first thing that you started doing after your year of taking it easy?
Well, the first thing I started doing was I've always been an avid writer. So I enjoy writing articles, editorials, and I enjoy keeping in touch with people by email. And so what I was finding is that friends and colleagues would often ask me to look over an email before they sent it. So usually this would be an important email to a boss or a client, or maybe somebody's having some relationship drama and they're about to send a long, dramatic email to their significant other. So I would often be asked to look over an email and assess it for not only mechanics like punctuation, grammar, spelling, but also just overall tone, sentence structure, meaning, making sure a more meaningful word is used instead of perhaps a less trite word, a less meaningful trite word. And so the idea was kind of planted in me to offer that as a service. How can I make it so that I have a product that can review and make sure your emails are in perfect form before you send them?
That is awesome. And that's called WordZen today, right?
Yeah. That is the product that became WordZen. And that product has also kind of had an interesting evolution, because I've always cared about perfect English, grammar, spelling, punctuation, right word choice, all the things I just described in my email communication. And so I kind of wrongly assumed that the rest of the world also cares about that. And so with WordZen, the initial value add was that we're going to make sure your English is perfect in your emails before you send them. But it turned out that after talking to lots of users and seeing what made a user stick to the product versus leave, it turned out that not everybody, most people don't care about that. Most people don't care that whether their emails have perfect English or not. But what I did find is that people care about saving time responding to their emails. So the real value is, can I make it so that you have to spend less time dealing with your inbox? And so I ended up morphing the product, or I guess the official word in the startup world would be a pivot. I pivoted the product to be less about correcting your English and more about helping you write the email from scratch and saving you time managing your email. And the way we do that is we let you talk in response to an email message, and you talk in free form natural speech. So you can and repeat your words and trip over yourself and duplicate yourself. And we will then, a live human editor listens to what you've said and then writes an appropriate email based on what you've said. And that's where I found the value. So more people are interested in WordZen now that it's a time-saving service than before when it was a proofreading service.
I absolutely love this idea. I think that the value prop is so very clear and strong to the people that would get value out of such a thing. So who do you find is sort of your ideal customer or the people that end up using WordZen, paying, subscribing to it?
Yeah. The ideal customer is somebody that sends at least 10 emails a day, generally replying to emails a day, where each email requires at least a few sentences. So there are some roles where you're responding to email where you can pretty much copy and paste your responses because a lot of your replies are just templated responses to the same type of questions that you're asked over and over. So WordZen would not be a good fit for that because there are other solutions that don't involve a human-based editing team where you can, Gmail has a canned responses feature and there's other extensions to email platforms that allow you to copy and paste responses easily. So this is valuable. WordZen is valuable when you need to write a custom email 10 times a day to 10 different people that you need to reply to.
I love it. And so, you know, you're working on WordZen, you're building this business. At what point does the idea for GMass come along? Because from what I can see, at least, GMass appears to be a much larger business today, at least.
It is. So what happened is while I was operating WordZen and just while it was in its infancy and I was starting to get users and get a little bit of press, I found that I needed a way to send low volume email campaigns to a small number of people at a time. So if I wanted to email all of my editors with an update to the platform, or if I wanted to email all of my users, of which there were only a couple hundred at the time, an update to a feature that WordZen now had, there was no easy way for me to do that inside my Gmail account. And let me take a step back and explain that I tend to live my entire day inside my Gmail account. Like, my Gmail account is my hub for everything that happens business-wise in my life. And so
I feel your pain.
And so because I spend so much time inside my Gmail account, I wanted to be able to send email campaigns from my Gmail account as well, which might seem ironic because I had just come from the world of Django Mail, which was separate website, separate application, you know, similar to a MailChimp or a Constant Contact. You know, why am I now trying to go small scale and operate within the Gmail ecosystem when I had just come off of building this platform that was sending hundreds of millions of emails a month? But I found this need. Like, I couldn't believe there wasn't already a way to do that. And earlier when I had talked about the convergence of a couple of things happening at the same time that led to this, those things that happened were, one, me realizing that nobody else had built this. Two, me realizing that I had a need for this because I spend so much time inside my Gmail account. And three, Gmail had just released an API. So an API meaning a way to program on top of Gmail, to make Gmail do things with your code that couldn't have otherwise been done before. And so it was now possible. And so I was certain that someone was going to build it. And I figured that since I had just had this like 10-year career in email marketing, that I should be the perfect person to build this. And that is the product that is now called GMass, which is an email marketing plugin for your Gmail account.
How long did it take you to build like the MVP of GMass, just the basic version of it that you felt comfortable shipping?
Yeah, about 3 weeks. I had a buddy of mine who's a developer help me with some of the back-end code. I wrote all of the front-end code. I then integrated our two projects together. And yeah, in about 3 weeks, I had a working version that I could use myself to send the small campaigns that I was needing to.
I love that. And at the time when you had this very basic version of the product available, were you already thinking of commercializing and giving it out to other people, making it a paid product, or was it really sort of just an internal tool for now?
Yeah, you know, so I definitely had the idea of making it a product from the outset. Like, when I realized that this didn't exist, this like fire was lit inside of me because I felt like I had stumbled upon this golden opportunity. Because the Gmail API had just been published by Google, and because this didn't already exist, I just like I don't know, it just like something clicked inside of me that said, I've got to build this. I know this is a big opportunity. It did not, however, occur to me to monetize it right away. One of the mental shifts I had after selling Django Mail was, this might be like kind of odd to say, but I became less motivated by money and more motivated by like the idea of creating a legacy or creating something lasting in the software world. So I was more motivated to have like millions of users using my product for free than I was having a smaller number of users paying for my product and making me a lot of money. And I think part of it was just like, you know, I was getting older, feeling my age. Part of it was that with Django Mail, I never really felt like the popular kid on the block. So there were all of these email marketing platforms that were way more popular than Django Mail, like Constant Contact and MailChimp and iContact and Vertical Response, and the list goes on and on. And I never felt like I had like the street cred that I wanted. So my motivation was a little bit different. I wanted lots of users, but I really didn't care about money.
So how did you then launch the free version that was publicly available?
So I launched it basically by doing two things. I started a Reddit thread in the startups subreddit just to get feedback from people and got a lot of upvotes. I think my post about GMAS ended up as the number one post in the startups subreddit for about 48 hours. And then two, I launched on Product Hunt. Product Hunt is a website that features 20 to 30 new products a day. Most of them are software products, and they kind of curate the list. So your product has to meet certain standards to be featured. And it's a highly trafficked website. So that drove a lot of signups to GMAS.
Do you remember how many signups as like a ballpark figure you got over the first few days when you launched?
Yeah, so from being featured on the Product Hunt homepage, I think I was getting a new sign up about every 3 minutes for the first 24 hours. So there was about 500 signups in the first 24 hours, and then it kind of tailed off from there. I think maybe the second 24 hours was maybe half of that, and then the third 24 hours was half of that. So it was a substantial. Influence on the success of GMAS, because even if people didn't sign up, they were at least now exposed to this idea of, wait a second, I can send an email campaign from my Gmail account. I don't have to log into to a MailChimp or something external to do that. So so along with the user signups were great, but I think just the exposure of the idea also was really beneficial.
Yeah, and you kind of instantly had this community too of a few hundred people that you could then start, you know, probing, polling with questions, and getting to know how they better would use such a product.
Totally. I mean, pretty much everything I've built into GMAS has been the result of a user asking for it, or in most cases, multiple users saying that they would really like it if the product did X, and then we end up building it. And occasionally what happens is if I run out of ideas, or if I'm not quite sure where to take the product next, I will send a mass email to my users saying, hey, what would you like GMAS to do now? And then that's how I develop my product roadmap.
So what made you flip the switch over to turning GMAS into a paid product? And at what point in time?
Yeah. So it was a little over a year into operating it as a free service. There were a couple of things that I was noticing. So one was that I had a ton of spammers flooding my network. So because GMAS was a completely free service, we had more users sending spam through GMAS than I had legitimate users sending legitimate email campaigns. So actually the primary motivation in making it a paid service was to get the spammers off the network. One of my goals in building GMAS as an email marketing platform, as opposed to Django Mail, my prior venture, was I wanted it to be as self-service and as automated of a platform as possible. So whereas like a Django Mail or a MailChimp or a Constant Contact, they have staff that monitors their outbound email flow to make sure users are conforming to email marketing best practices, to make sure they're not spamming, to make sure they're not sending out phishing scams. I wanted a system that didn't need to be policed like that, mostly because I didn't want to have to hire staff to manage that. I just wanted it to be done by the software in an automated way. But it turned out that it was really hard to write software to catch all those scenarios. And so my attempts at that failed. And so the only like solution I could come up with to kind of turn off that flow of spam was to monetize it, because I knew the spammers wouldn't pay. Most of them would. There are some that will and still do. But for the most part, that solved the problem of fixing GMAS's reputation in the email deliverability world.
So when you went from being a free tool to a paid tool, did you see the number of users you had drop dramatically? Or was it sort of, you gave like people a ramp up period to make a decision whether they want to pay or not?
Yeah, what it is it's a freemium model. So if you remained on the free plan, you could still use it in unlimited fashion. If you have a free account, you can send up to 50 emails at a time. But then if you need to send more than that, you have to subscribe. So in terms of what happened, I got a lot of hate mail. So when I first announced that I was going to convert to a paid model, I mean, a lot of users had become dependent upon it. And a lot of people, despite what I thought was a pretty low monthly fee, so GMAS, the cost ranges anywhere from $7 a month to $20 a month. This is US dollars. I had a lot of people say that they, for whatever reason, they couldn't afford it. A lot of people outside of the US couldn't afford it. And so I comped all of their accounts. Anybody that said that they couldn't afford it, and even now when somebody says, hey, I'd love to use your tool, but I can't afford it, we just let them use it for free anyway. But for the most part, more than 80% of my regular users converted and put in their credit card and subscribed.
Wow. That's a really high conversion rate.
Yeah. Yeah. I was surprised too. I had been reading stats about what happens when software companies monetize for the first time. And I forget what the stats were, but they were pretty dismal. I think like I was reading that like less than 10% of your free users will subscribe to a paid plan. But I think I was also doing it differently because the entire product was free for the life of the for the first year of the product. And so people knew that if they wanted to send that email campaign by any other method, they would have to pay. So I think it was a reasonable transition for most of the users to ask them to start paying. And again, for the people that where the money was really a struggle, we just, we marked their account as complimentary and let them use it anyway.
Man, that is super generous. So digging into the numbers now, so looking at where you guys are today with GMAS, how much revenue are you generating annually? How many paying customers?
Yeah, so GMAS is doing about $90,000 a month right now. We have 6,300 paying customers, and we have about 140,000 total users.
Wow, that is awesome. That's been really quick growth then.
Yeah, it's been about I think we're what like 2.5 years in now. I launched GMAS in September of 2015. That's when it was featured on Product Hunt, and it's been a really fun, crazy journey. We've added a ton of features. I've had to re-architect it multiple times just because the volume of email that we handle grows every month, and so the code that worked to send 10,000 emails a day wasn't the code that worked to send 500,000 emails a day. And that's about what we send now. We send 500 to 600,000 emails every day, all from people's Gmail accounts.
Wow. That is awesome. Now, aside from word of mouth and referrals, which is how I actually originally heard about GMAS, it was just from a friend, a fellow marketer who uses the product. What do you feel, aside from that channel, has been your biggest way of acquiring new customers over the years?
Yeah, you know, our biggest source of leads is my blog. So I've written a ton of content on email marketing and tips and tricks with Gmail and how to optimize deliverability to Gmail inboxes. So that content that I've written has ended up ranking really well SEO-wise and on Google. And that's our biggest source of traffic and our biggest source of signups.
Nice. That is a great example of the power of content marketing.
You know, and just, you know, along those lines, it's kind of interesting because as the revenue for GMAS started to increase, I wanted to do whatever I could to scale the business as rapidly as possible. So I started spending a lot on paid advertising. So Facebook ads, LinkedIn ads, and Google AdWords. And it's interesting that you and I are talking today, Ryan, because just today, so before I tell you what I did today, I had ramped up to spending about $12,000 a month just on Facebook ads. And just today, I shut it all off. All my Facebook ads this morning. And the reason is that, man, I was just looking at my stats and I feel like I'm the victim of like massive click fraud. Like lots of people clicking on the ads, but then not taking any action beyond that. And it was pretty clear just from looking at my stats on my Facebook ad console that something was wrong. So starting today, I've shut off my $12,000 a month worth of Facebook ads, and I'm going to see if this has an impact on the business. I suspect that it won't, and that my number of signups and subscribers will stay the same and hopefully even grow despite that. But I'll know in a few weeks.
Man, well, please report back, because that's actually a really interesting experiment.
Yeah, right.
Are you seeing a big difference between number of clicks reported within Facebook ads versus the number of, you know, visitors coming from Facebook to your site? Is that what you're seeing the discrepancy with?
Basically, yeah. So in the Facebook ad console, one of the things you can see for each ad campaign that you're running is the number of clicks on the ad, but then the number of landing page views. So the number of people that are clicking on the ad and that the number of people that are being registered is actually having viewed the web page that the ad was leading them to. And there's a huge discrepancy. So I might have, so within a week's worth of time for a particular ad campaign, I might have 1,000 clicks on the ad, but then only 200 views of the actual landing page. Well, how does that make sense? That means that 800 people, 1,000 minus 200, that means that 800 people are clicking the ad, and before the web page even loads, are changing their mind and closing their browser. And that might be the case if my website ran like super slow or if I had a bad server or a bad network connection or something, but I know that's not the case. And so the only way I can imagine that that's the case is if there's like bots that are clicking on the ad but then not letting the page load. It's just, it's something I need to dig into more, but something is amiss. And I remember thinking to myself during the whole Facebook Cambridge Analytica scandal, I don't think that's Facebook's biggest problem. I think Facebook's biggest problem that will come to light sooner or later is click fraud. And I think advertisers are gonna wisen up and there's gonna be some changes there.
Wow. Well, please report back and we'll include an update in the show notes as well.
All right, okay.
Well, AJ, I want to be respectful of your time. I've got a couple of my frequently asked questions for you, and then I'll let you go.
Okay, great. Shoot.
AJ, do you have any particular strategies, tactics, or ideas that you've tested that come to mind that have ended up being a failure?
So there are definitely things that I've invested a lot of effort into that did not pan out. I don't know if I'd call them a failure, but here are a couple of things. So GMAS has an affiliate program, and I spent a lot of time building this affiliate program thinking that if my users had a way of referring other users and then making money off of it, it would really drive a lot of traffic and drive a lot of signups. It's driven like a trickle of signups and a trickle of paid subscriptions, but it hasn't been as impactful as I thought it would be. And part of that is just because I've realized that when you have an affiliate program, I need to dedicate a lot of time to running that affiliate program and promoting that affiliate program. And there's this whole world of affiliate marketing that I am nowhere near an expert in, but it was something that I thought I could just build and it would kind of take off, and that just, it didn't happen. And then a second thing is that I thought it would be really cool to accept Bitcoin as a payment option for GMS. And I thought that that might have a big impact on subscriptions as well. And it turned out it didn't really. I spent a lot of time making it so you could pay by Bitcoin. And then I had maybe over the course of 6 months, maybe 30 users ended up paying by Bitcoin, as opposed to, you know, a couple thousand who paid by credit card or PayPal in that same time period. And then to add insult to injury, the payment processor that I use to handle all my payments, which is Stripe, which is a fairly well-known company, just ended support for Bitcoin a few weeks ago. So that made all the effort that I had put into my Bitcoin integration kind of go to waste.
Oh, man. Well, lessons learned, I guess.
Yeah.
All right, AJ. Well, this is going to be my last question for you. What's the best investment you feel you've ever made in the context of growing your businesses? And this could be in the form of time, money, tools, products, services, or otherwise.
Yeah. Let me think about that for a second. I feel like the best investment, I hope this isn't a cheesy answer, I feel like the best investment I've made is in myself. So, I think one of the advantages I have is being a developer myself, being a developer / entrepreneur. I think there's a lot of entrepreneurs that don't have the benefit of also being a software developer, and so they have to hire that out, and or they have to find a tech co-founder, which can be a difficult thing. And so I think that investing in my own skill set, so being a software developer and then learning the other fundamentals of running a business, the operation side, the hiring side, the marketing side, that's what's allowed me to run lean and profitable.
I do not think that's a cheesy answer at all. I think that's a very good answer.
Thanks.
Awesome. Well, AJ, thank you for being here. Can you tell everyone listening where they can go to find you online and all your projects, everything that you're up to?
Yeah, you can email me at aj@wordzen.com. That's aj@wordzen.com. You can give WordZen a try at wordzen.com, and you can give GMAS a try at gmas.co.
Beautiful. All right. Well, AJ, thank you for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Ryan.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Side Hustle Project, I would love your support. Head on over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating. And as always, you can catch every episode of the Side Hustle Project on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for tuning in.